Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Office of Family Assistance Conference entitled A New Look at Volunteering, Promising Approaches for TANF and Community Leaders. Just a reminder, today's conference is being recorded. Now, for opening remarks and introductions, I'll turn the call over to Lisa Washington Thomas. Lisa, please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to today's TANF Faith-Based and Community Organizations Initiative webinar, A New Look at Volunteering, Promising Approaches for TANF and Community Leaders. The TANF FBCL Initiative is a four-year research and implementation project funded by our Office, Office of Family Assistance within the Administration for Children and Families at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. The project's primary goal is to identify promising practices and strengthen collaboration between TANF programs and local community and faith-based organizations. As today's speakers will describe their own experiences, many faith-based and community organizations have access to volunteers, monetary resources, they're strategically located in buildings, and have other supports that volunteers can use in helping low-income families achieve self-sufficiency. Today's webinar emerges from one of the most popular sessions at our recent series of Collaboration Institute meetings, where over 150 leaders gathered to develop their local partnerships on behalf of the TANF-eligible families. During these trainings, regional, state, and local TANF officials brought their local faith-based or community partner to a one-day workshop designed to develop strategic interagency partnerships, organizational development, volunteering, and action planning. The Collaboration Institute emphasized that managing volunteers is in some ways like managing staff. It takes intentionality, skill, and support. It doesn't happen by itself. And while literally millions of Americans are willing to volunteer, research shows it usually takes a personal ask to get volunteers to actually serve in your organization. Today's webinar offers a direct window into the work and wide-ranging opportunities involved in supporting volunteers. As you know, this afternoon we have lead representatives of the National Volunteering Organization, the Corporation for National and Community Service, and an executive director of a 52-person job training center and homeless shelter in Little Rock, Arkansas, and a senior official from an innovative TANF agency, the Illinois Department of Human Services Human Capital Development Program. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we look forward to your active participation and your questions. One of the project team members, Josh Good, will now share a few more details about our webinar and introduce this afternoon's presenters. Josh?
Thank you, Lisa. My name is Josh Good, and I serve as the project technical specialist. We know from Bureau of Labor Statistics that over 62 million Americans volunteered between 2009 and 2010. For those looking for work, we also know that volunteering broadens a person's networking contacts and often encourages job skills and leadership. So today's webinar, which emerges on the heels of the Collaboration Institute meetings Lisa's just described, is intended to support you as TANF program officials and leaders of grassroots organizations as you think through the practicalities of promoting strategic volunteer opportunities in your community. This past year, the Department of Labor has been supporting jobs clubs, which meet on a voluntary basis in congregations and in community organizations throughout the country. As we'll hear this afternoon, many TANF programs encourage participants to volunteer their time and talent in settings that may lead to a job or may simply benefit their neighbors. Research also tells us that volunteering is good for a person's mental health, particularly when they've been without work for more than 12 weeks. And many community-based programs rely extensively on volunteers through informal relationships at the local level and through partnerships with organizations like the Corporation for National and Community Service, the Hands-On Network, United Way, and many others. I'd like now to introduce our first speaker, Georgia Mjartin, who has served for more than 15 years as a board member and now as executive director of Our House Incorporated in Little Rock, Arkansas. Our House was founded in 1987 out of an interfaith movement in central Arkansas to support a growing homeless population. Its model has been replicated in 39 states, and it feeds more than 7,000 people each week. Georgia, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Josh. Like you said, I'm Georgia Muirton, and it's my pleasure to be on this call. So I'm the executive director of Our House, and I think one of the reasons we were invited to participate is that we are a community-based organization that is completely driven by volunteers. And when I say completely driven, that doesn't mean that we don't have full-time paid staff. We certainly do, because it takes those on-the-ground folks to really plug in volunteers in a strong way. But if you can imagine, from my little 4-acre campus here in Little Rock, Arkansas, we serve 1,000 homeless people a year, and we have 7,000 different people who volunteer at our organization each year. So what that looks like is a ratio of 1 to 7. So for every one homeless child or homeless parent that comes into our program, they're receiving volunteer services from 7 people over the course of their stay. So I just thought I'd kind of give you an insight into how we've been able to use volunteers and a lot of different kinds of volunteers in our organization. So if you want to just start with that first slide, and I'm not sure if it's showing up very well on your screens, but I wanted to just kind of walk you through. There's a reason I chose these photos. So these are photos from our after-school and summer program, which is actually the only after-school and summer program for homeless kids in the state of Arkansas. We created it after, just if you look on the left-hand column, after we did a needs assessment. So we brought our organizational staff together. That time we didn't have so many volunteers, and we brainstormed about what would it look like if we could meet all of our needs, what are the problems that we are encountering, and what are our big dreams and what are our small ideas. So that's kind of my first step, is before you ask your staff or your team the question, how can we use volunteers, that can in itself be a little bit limiting. So start bigger, start broader. So for us, what that looked like is that we had on any given day, we had between 30 and 40 children in our organization, and about half of those were school-aged. So the parents were required to find full-time work, so the parents were at jobs, and we had 20 to 25 kids coming in every day after school, coming to our shelter with no activity, no parent, and it was a real problem for our organization. So in response to that, we said, how can we meet this need? How can we solve this problem? And we had this idea of an after-school program that would not only meet the need of the parents to have their children in a healthy, educational, and safe environment during that important period from 2:30 to 6, but would also really invest in the kids, would equip them for success in school and success as they got older in the workplace. So if you look at these pictures, I want to just say that we used volunteers from the very beginning. So in that photo of a room, that's the Our Club space, and everything in that room was put there by volunteers, from the carpet that was laid to the paint on the walls to the bookshelf that was built by volunteers. You see a volunteer here in the next photo kind of moving clockwise. You see this volunteer who's doing our homework power hour with a kid. So for us to staff this program, it's pretty inexpensive for us when we're able to plug in volunteers in that capacity. We brought in Boy Scouts to establish a Boy Scout troop all on a volunteer basis. In the bottom photo, which you can't see that well, those are some kids on a field trip, and that's during the summer. We realized that for us to take 60 homeless kids on a field trip every day, we would need some extra hands to monitor them and to make sure that they were safe. And so that's an area where we were able to plug in a national service program, which is called AmeriCorps VISTA, Volunteers in Service to America. There's a VISTA Summer Associates program, and so through that we were able to plug in 14 full-time, basically summer staff to work with our kids and work in our programs, and that really didn't cost us anything. It was a free resource that we were able to tap into. And so you can just kind of go through those photos and see what that looks like. The next step on here, number 2, is just which of these dreams can be accomplished by volunteers. And I think within our organization, what we've been able to do really well is to say any dream can be accomplished by volunteers. Sometimes it's limiting to start and just say, that we want to use volunteers in this capacity. But if you say everything we can do can be accomplished by volunteers, then it expands your thinking about what they can do. And the last step is really hone what that looks like, how you're going to plug in your volunteers. So write job descriptions. Write an internship proposal, and write a one-liner. So, a one-liner is just, come for an hour once a week and sit with our kids and help them with their homework. That's a one-liner that anyone can plug into. A longer job description is something that you might give a volunteer who's going to serve with you full-time for a year, let's say through an AmeriCorps program. So if you want to advance to the next slide, the next step is know what you're looking for before you start looking for your volunteers. And along the left-hand column, these are just some different groupings. So short-term volunteers, long-term volunteers, individuals or groups. Unskilled volunteers are sometimes really useful. I just want to stop here and kind of point this out. We use people who are parolees, people who are on probation, who need mandatory community service. And some of our most wonderful stories come from people who come out here who are unskilled, who care for our outdoor facilities, who do some general maintenance for us for free as volunteers do a mandatory community service. And then they see that even though they're just coming out of prison or they're on probation, they think that their life is going pretty bad. Sometimes those folks see that they're actually able to do something meaningful. They're able to help homeless people. And we've seen a lot of people come through that program who are really inspired to do something good and not just mandatory community service. And then the last one that I kind of want to call attention to is sometimes rather than looking broadly at do we need professionals or do we need short-term or long-term volunteers, sometimes you'll identify that you have a gap in your organization or in your services. So a gap that we identified, you can advance to the next slide now. So a gap that we identified was that we, in our youth programs, we were serving about 90% African-American youth, and there was this one day when I walked into our summer program and I saw a room full of African-American boys, and I saw that our volunteers and our AmeriCorps Vista members were primarily white women and some black women, but we just have very few African-American men serving in our program. And so we intentionally went out to an African-American fraternity at one of our local colleges and really intentionally recruited African-American males to serve as mentors with these kids. And you can see in this photo, these are two of our best volunteers volunteering with some of our young boys, teaching them how to tie ties. So sometimes that's really important to be very targeted in your recruitment. So I'm just going to leave this for you as kind of a resource. A good thing to do when you do get your volunteer in is to really get to know who is this volunteer. And so this is just a rubric to help you kind of work through that. So heart being just help you understand why is this person volunteering? What's their heart motivation? Head being what is their practical motivation? What's their need or want? And Josh mentioned sometimes people are out of work and just need to network or gain some skills. Those are practical needs. The heart calling is going to be something more like, you know, I love children, or I was homeless for a number of years, and I feel called now to give back now that I'm on my feet. Those are some of the emotional drivers that we've seen. The can and the can't is also really important. So on the can, we want to say, okay, what can you do? So I'll just give you this example. A really bright young woman, you can advance to the next slide because I've got a photo of her in here. This sweet girl on the left, Jazzy Jackson, came to us with a lot of barriers. If you looked at her on paper, she didn't have transportation. She was very low income. She lived with her aunt and uncle who were disabled. Sometimes she had to take care of her nieces and nephews, and she was just a high school kid. So in a lot of ways, she had many barriers. But when we looked at her can, when we looked at her talents, we said, well, first of all, you've got an entire summer to give. Second of all, in terms of your talents and abilities, this is a girl who is a straight-A student, who had lived through poverty, was really in a poverty situation, who could really relate to our homeless children, and was succeeding, was striving. And we said, what a beautiful inspiration. So you can advance to the next slide. And you can see here how this grid kind of works out for someone like Jazzy. So we would literally fill this in. And just coming up to the head side, where we identified that she had a lot of need, she had a lot of reasons why she wanted to serve with us. One of those was that she needed financial support. Then you can go down to the canon. I'm not sure if it's cutting off on your screen, but under resources and connections, one of the resources that she had, because she was a good student, is she was able to plug into an internship that allowed her to get a summer stipend for her service. So we were able to help her meet her financial need by plugging her into this resource. So sometimes it's like matchmaking and making a volunteer really fit within your organization. And she has, just a quick story, but she served with us now for 3 years every summer and has now gotten into college on a scholarship. It's just really a success story. We're so proud of her, and she's made a huge impact on so many of our kids' lives. If you want to go to the next slide, I won't really talk about this. This is just for you to print off and use within your own organization. So you can just move on to the next. All right, so once you get your volunteers in, I think one of the most important things is how do you keep your volunteers happy and coming back and really motivated to continue to serve in a meaningful way. The first step is it's super important to set clear expectations. What do you want? What do you want to get out of this volunteer? And what does your volunteer want? When we bring in our AmeriCorps VISTA members, and I'll just say a word about that, throughout the year we have 11 full-time AmeriCorps VISTA members, so VISTA being Volunteers in Service to America, who basically serve similar to staff. You know, they're here, they come to our staff meetings. I am very intentional, or their supervisors are very intentional, when they first apply, we want to understand from them, why do you want to do this? And so just to use this as an example, we had one AmeriCorps VISTA member who had just finished her PhD, so incredibly bright, incredibly educationally talented, had no work experience, knew that she was going to go into a teaching position at a university, and she said, I need to get some real organizational experience. So we were able to meet that need of hers while plugging in basically for free for our organization a PhD-level person, which was a tremendous gift to our organization. Next, energize your volunteers. Make sure that they're getting something out of the experience. I think it's an easy mistake to think that just being thankful and, you know, doing nice things for your volunteers and thanking them is enough. That works for some folks. It doesn't work for everybody. It's kind of like, you know, that book about love languages. You know, you need to understand what is the love language of your volunteer. For some, a thank you card will be great and will meet their needs. For others, it's a letter of recommendation. And for others, it'll be that that job contact that you can make for them if it's an unemployed volunteer person trying to get back into the workforce. And finally, communicate. Communicate with your volunteers as frequently as possible. You can advance to the next slide. And this is just my last kind of screen capture of everything that we've walked through. So first, know your needs before you go out and try to get volunteers. Know what you're looking for. Know your volunteers, really get to know them, and that's what that rubric is for. And finally, just nurture your volunteers to keep them. And the last thing I wanted to kind of point out is all of the photos in this presentation, and I know the screen was a little bit grainy, you didn't get to see them that well, but all of these photographs were taken by Amanda Woods, who is an AmeriCorps VISTA volunteer with our house. We also have, I mentioned the 11 year-round VISTAs, we also have 3 AmeriCorps members who serve on a year-round basis, and then we have another 14 members who serve in the summer, so that's an important driver for our organization. Amanda, just a side note, is actually a person who is on disability. She's a disabled person. And one of the beautiful things about the AmeriCorps and the AmeriCorps VISTA programs is that the income that people receive through that doesn't count as income. And so she's able to continue to receive her SSI and to be on disability and to also, you know, get that value of serving in a meaningful capacity in an organization like our house. And we're just so grateful for her and for the photographs that she takes within our organization. So I'll welcome questions during the Q&A time, and I hope that that was helpful to you all who are listening to this call.
Thank you very much, Georgia. And just to quickly assure anyone who didn't copy down all the notes about heart and head, we will be sending all 3 PowerPoints to you by way of follow-up to this webinar today. So you'll have a PDF version of all of the slides that you see today. Our next speaker is Michael Laverty, who directs state programming in both Missouri and Kansas for the Corporation for National and Community Service. CNCS is a federal agency that was created in 1993 to promote national service. It directly engages over 5 million Americans in service through Senior Corps, AmeriCorps, and Learn and Serve America. Michael, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Josh. As you can see on the slide, the mission of the Corporation for National and Community Service is to improve lives, strengthen communities, and foster civic engagement through service and volunteering. The next slide shows a breakdown of our programs and how the corporation is broken down by different programs. You'll see Senior Corps there to the far left. I won't spend a lot of time explaining Senior Corps programming, but I will say foster grandparents and senior companions are individuals who are of low income in a community that are placed with a one-to-one match with an individual who needs services. So many of your clients or program participants may qualify to participate through foster grandparents or senior companions. You'll find more information about this program on our website. But RSVP, I noticed that the last presentation touched briefly on the fact that RSVP volunteers are integral in short and long-term volunteer assignments with your organization. So, again, I'm not going to go into much detail about Senior Corps, but I just wanted to highlight the fact that those three programs are out there and also available for your clients or your programs to partner with as we move forward. But today what we really wanted to highlight on this call and from our office, what we manage program development-wise, is AmeriCorps Vista. So you'll see there in the center, Vista is front and center of the AmeriCorps family. The other members of the AmeriCorps family are in CCC, which is National Civilian Community Corps, AmeriCorps State, AmeriCorps National Direct, and AmeriCorps Tribal. So each of these programs has very different outcomes and participant requirements. AmeriCorps State can be garnered in each of your states. On our website, there are links to how you can get more information about AmeriCorps State, but to give you the brief and quick version of AmeriCorps State, keep in mind if you wanted to deliver a service, if there's something you needed to have delivered, AmeriCorps members through AmeriCorps State and National as well, they actually deliver a service. So we often use the analogy of Habitat for Humanity or a nonprofit similar. If they needed a house built, AmeriCorps State and National would be a great partner. Now, these are long-term assignments, as we just heard before. But for NCCC, it's a team that moves about the country. For instance, I am in Missouri just after the tornado in Joplin. NCCC has been integral in coming in 2 to 6 week stints where these teams are working to clean up debris. They can do intense tutoring programs. You name it, they can do it. You just have to provide them housing and a place where they can prepare meals and bed down for the night. They basically camp. They bring their own gear. But, again, I could get mired down in the details of our programs. There are so many different programs you can see on this slide. And over to the far right, before I jump into a detailed dive of Vista, you see Learn and Serve America. We have a number of different Learn and Serve programs. All of the Learn and Serve programs are designed to engage individuals with volunteer service in their community between the ages of K through 12 or higher education. So while these individuals are volunteering in the community, they must have an activity that's tied to their curriculum, so they're learning based on the service they're providing to a community. So on the next slide, we delve into what Volunteers in Service to America really means. That's VISTA, the acronym, Getting Things Done for America. And you'll see on the next slide a breakdown of AmeriCorps being the poverty-fighting arm. So in that slide before last where you saw the breakdown of the different programs, in AmeriCorps there's one program that's designed specifically to address and work to eradicate poverty, and that would be AmeriCorps Vista. So all of the programs that our offices approve have to have that component. So whether you're working in a project such as Our House, or whether you're working to recruit volunteers for Habitat, or you're fundraising for another nonprofit, there has to be a service component that includes a plan to work on eradicating poverty through AmeriCorps Vista. You see on the second point there that 6,500 positions are filled nationally each year. That's closer to 8,000 in the last couple of years since, as you heard before, Summer Associates has really been a push of our organization, which allows individuals a short-term opportunity to volunteer and give back in their community. So VISTA members collaborate with low-income individuals and communities to fight poverty focus on capacity building. So I briefly mentioned raising funds. So if your organization or program needs resources in order to implement, say, a new program in your community or even expand to an area that you're not able to cover currently, an AmeriCorps VISTA position could be dedicated to that for a full 365 days of service, and they could be focused on raising funds, grant writing, just implementing tracking systems, whatever it may be around fundraising issues that your organization or program may have. They can also serve full-time to recruit volunteers and design a sustainable program. So, as I mentioned before, these can be used to expand programming if there's an area that you wanted to reach that you're not currently reaching, or if you have a program that's not currently supported with funds in your organization. So we have more than 1,200 project sponsors, including nonprofit and public agencies. Those are the two requirements, or one of each. You either have to be a nonprofit or a public agency to partner and be a program sponsor with the corporation offices. And these positions, as I mentioned before, are full-time, year-long service, 365 days a year. On the next slide, you will see the initiatives that the corporation is focused on. As we move into 2012, education, veterans, military families. The second one there, veterans and military families, is a real it's a push for our agency this year. That's kind of a new area for us, so we're seeing a lot of programming spring up devoted to that issue area. Environmental stewardship, disaster preparedness. We have a great presence. We have had for many years in New Orleans. We're shifting away from that, and now we've seen a great presence in the Tuscaloosa region as well as Joplin and any other areas throughout the nation where there's disaster. Most often, NCCC is dispatched to help with that. Economic opportunities and healthy futures are the other two. And you'll see on the next slide, VISTA really is focused on sustainability and capacity building. So the focus should be development that meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. VISTA projects typically last 3 years. So if you're thinking about, you know, what could VISTA do for you, visualize what you could conceivably begin and hopefully have sustained within a three-year period. Our offices often see partnerships go beyond the 3 years, but typically that's only for, say, a fourth year and potentially a fifth year if there is some challenge or hurdle that your program has experienced that didn't allow it to materialize in a full three-year period. So VISTA members, they increase the capacity and work with other outcomes for the VISTA members' work so that you're not back to square one at the end of your VISTA project. So you have to think about building something that once the member is gone, as the next point brings out, service builds capacity within the agencies where they're placed. So when the member leaves, something has been created that will continue without the resources of VISTA. So what VISTA members do, VISTA members, they build volunteer management on the next slide, leadership and training systems. They build development systems and do developmental work, create community partnerships. They expand current programs and develop new programs. These are just a few of the examples of what VISTA members can do. But again, one of the things we often tell projects as they're thinking about what they would like to see done with VISTA resources from our offices, you know, dream big. Think, if I had the resources or if I could bring in someone to really help me strategize and plan, what would that look like and where would I want to go with that? And then we can help you plug VISTA into that thought. So what VISTA members do not do, as I mentioned before, is direct service. So VISTA members are the poverty-fighting arm of AmeriCorps, but they do not provide direct services. So they aren't the ones mentoring. They would be the ones recruiting mentors. They're the ones behind the scenes. They're the ones back at the desk making sure that things are going to happen programmatically. They are not part-time service. We do have programs that allow for part-time service, but VISTA is not a program for someone interested in part-time service. It is a full term of service, which we consider 365 days. They cannot hold employment outside of their VISTA placement. That tends to really weed out individuals, as we heard before, the heart many of our VISTA members are doing it because of the heart. They're driven to provide needy communities and needed services within their own community. And the stipend that they receive, which we'll touch on in a moment, is minimal. So these individuals are serving for a full year, 365 days, because of their heart. They do not do international work. They do not supervise employees or other volunteers. Now, with that said, they can coordinate volunteers. So if your agency does not have or your program does not have a volunteer coordinator, VISTA position could be approved for such an activity. So on the next slide, you'll see what our organization provides for these individuals and for organizations hosting AmeriCorps VISTA members. You can see the first point is the education award, often referred to as a scholarship, but this is achieved after a full 365-day term of service. Individuals can receive two of these education awards in a lifetime, and if they choose to serve a third term, they can receive a $1,500 cash stipend at the end of their service. While serving, they receive a member living allowance from our organization, which is roughly $10,000 to $11,000 a year, depending on where they're serving. So as you heard me say before, this is someone who's really giving of the heart. And also, as we heard before in the example, it could be an individual who is already receiving some other type of benefit. This can be supplemental to that and does not affect the benefits they may already be receiving. So we see many types of recruits, from individuals who have a college education to individuals who are from the low-income community and have no education, but they would like to use this as an opportunity to gain that opportunity for to educate themselves. So at the end of their service, they would have availability to the education awards. We provide health coverage during the member's term of service. For that individual alone, it does not provide for family, but for that individual, there is health coverage during their year of service. We provide the payroll services from our offices, so as an organization, you're not saddled with that challenge. Training for the members and for supervisors. So if you've applied to our office, your application has been approved, you would identify a supervisor. We would send your supervisor designee to one of our training events held in various locations throughout the country. Then you would ideally go home to your program, and then you would use our resources that we provide you to help you recruit either local or national recruits to support the program. And then those members would go to one of our trainings at a designated site throughout the country that we would also pay for. We provide a moving allowance for members up to $500. So if someone you have identified, say, in another state would like to come serve in your community, we provide that assistance to get them started. And there's liability coverage for members as well. For members or candidates that you've chosen who qualify, there's child care reimbursement. That is a maximum of $550 per family or per household based on eligibility. Assistance with member recruitment. So I've mentioned that already, but I'll go into a little more detail here. We have an online recruitment system. Over the last several years, we have seen the number of individuals interested in participating in AmeriCorps VISTA and other AmeriCorps programs grow astronomically. We have more than 300,000 individuals in the system who have created applications and would like to be placed with projects. Now, granted, there are some caveats to that. Not everyone wants to come to your community. So once you gain access to the recruitment system, though, you can search many different ways by zip code, by area code, different ways that you can find who has an application in the system. Here in Missouri, we have a very successful program out of St. Louis, and they always joke with us saying, you know, who wants to come to St. Louis and work in the inner city where, you know, there's a low-income, high number of senior citizens? And that was this program's focus. And they started recruiting their first year, which was about 4 or 5 years ago. And their first group of VISTA class members, they recruited 5 members from different states throughout the nation to come to St. Louis. And our office hadn't seen such a high number. It's very seldom that 100% of the recruits are from out of state. As we were talking to them, asking them, you know, what's your secret? They said, well, we actually searched the database for individuals who have the qualifications we desire, and then we go after them, and we really recruit them, you know, heavily. And it has been one of the the most successful projects we've ever had in Missouri. And all of the first class of those VISTA members after year one went on to grad school. So it was quite a story, and unusual, but you get to decide what level of education your individual recruit may have. So if you need a highly skilled individual, then you can set the requirement of a bachelor's degree or some college. If that's not necessary, you're looking for someone to really make connections within the community from where they live. Maybe education requirement isn't going to need to be set so high for that. So the last bullet there you see, FICA, is provided by our organization. We pay that from the living allowance. And on the next slide, we'll talk quickly about sponsor responsibilities. To develop and implement a project plan and performance measures. Everything that we do has to have a trackable outcome. So as we move through the process, we help you develop those performance measures. As I mentioned before, you'll need to identify a supervisor for the members, someone who can actually be the point of contact to handle any situations that your members may have while serving throughout their year of service. Create an advisory council that must be made up of representatives from the low-income community that you plan to serve. Recruit and place VISTA members, as I was just describing. You can recruit members locally, or you can use our online database to search national recruits. Either way, the members have to come through that system. So if you identified someone locally from your community that you know would be, you know, a high-quality year-long volunteer, they would then go to the system and apply to the position that we would help you create as part of the application process. You'd have to provide workspace, equipment, and supplies, anything necessary for this individual to be successful within your organization to achieve what it is that you hope that they're going to achieve within their year of service. So on the next slide, we'll continue responsibilities. You need to create a 2-week member on-site orientation and training, helping that individual get acclimated to the community. So you would assist the VISTA member with community entry, introduce them in a proper way. We often see projects highlighting the arrival of their VISTA member in newsletters, meetings, whatever that may be within your organization and within the community. Conduct member performance appraisals, track time and attendance, and perform other supervisory duties. Connect VISTA members with training and development opportunities throughout their year of service to make certain that they're going to be successful doing what it is you hoped that they would do and achieve for your organization. And document all project achievements and legacy through our PPR, which is the Project Progress Report, and that's an online system. So next steps you'll see here, we have you would design and submit a concept paper. I know there's a lot of information coming at you through this webinar, and these slides are content heavy, but so just to take a step back, be thinking about what you would want to achieve in your concept paper. We want brief information in this concept paper. We want you really just to give us some of the few details of what your organization is about and what you hope to achieve. We'll go into this a little bit more in a slide beyond here, but if approved, you'll create and submit a full application. And if awarded, as I mentioned before, supervisors would go to an orientation, and you can see in months there's a snapshot of a timeline about how long that can take. Depending on the resources within your state office's budget, this can be potentially sped up, or it could take longer, just depending on resource availability. So on the next slide, there's a screenshot of our webpage where you would go to create your online user account, which would also allow you to create a concept paper. So you can see our web address is cns.gov. You would choose eGrants, which is near the center of the screen at our homepage. If you didn't have an account, you would create your account, and then you would use this system to create your concept paper. The concept paper on the next slide you'll see covers basic applicant information, application information such as the narratives, which is an executive summary, basically telling us, you know, what you hope to do, who you are. But in the second narrative is need. That's where we really want to hear from you briefly what your community's need is that you'll be addressing with our resources, how you will strengthen communities utilizing VISTA resources, and what your organization's capacity is, what your track record is. Do you have other resources? As you heard before, Georgia mentioned that she utilizes other corporation programs as well as other volunteer opportunities and other federal agency resources. So tell us a little bit about that there. And then you would review, authorize, and you would submit it. So almost finished here. A few things to consider. Some of this is a revisit of what I've just shared with you, but what changes will you measure within your agency where the members are going to serve? What changes will you measure in the community and the people for which these agencies are serving? How will you engage community members? And as I said before, especially thinking about the advisory council, particularly representatives from the low-income community, and how will the VISTA members work, lift people out of poverty? How will the systems members create that the members create be sustainable beyond the three-year project? So you want to think of something that they can prop up and leave standing once they exit from your organization. One thing to add there, many times VISTA members who are very successful in developing something often have utilized skills that have allowed them to create something that will potentially employ them. Many times VISTAs create a program and develop the resources that could potentially employ them. That's not always the case, but it's not uncommon. So on the next slide, you'll see how you can follow us or find more information about us. That's our website there at the top. You can friend us on Facebook using that link. We also have a Twitter feed, so if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can. We have a number of resources on YouTube, particularly the national conferences and presentations that have been done over the years by our organization, as well as hands-on. And other resources. Some of the statistics that were being shared by Josh at the beginning are compiled also by our agency through Volunteering in America. You can craft pages about your state or your community and track where your community stands as far as number of volunteers and other useful information there at volunteeringinamerica.gov. And I'll take questions during Q&A.
Thanks very much, Michael. And so just a quick word about questions. We will have a slide immediately following our third speaker's presentation that explains how to enter a question that you may have. So please keep those in the queue as you think ahead for our discussion time. Our final speaker today is Kapriska Randolph Robinson, who leads the Human Capital Development Program in the Illinois Department of Human Services. This summer, Kapriska attended a Collaboration Institute meeting and has since led an effort within Illinois Department of Human Services to support TANF participants as volunteers in local work settings. She will share with us a bit about local TANF partnerships there and their volunteer services program, which supports statewide volunteer services through a manager in the volunteer services program. Kapriska, the floor is yours, and will be followed by James Butler of the Office of Family Assistance.
Thank you, Josh, and good afternoon. I hope you guys can hear me very clearly. Again, my name is Kapriska Randolph Robinson, and I'm with Illinois Department of Human Services, Human Capital Development, and I'm going to talk a little bit about creating opportunities for TANF participants through partnerships. I want to just tell you a little short, true story real quick. I have a friend that was laid off for about a year and a half. She has a bachelor's degree, about 15 years of management experience, was receiving unemployment during this time period. Doing a lot of job searching, had a lot of telephone interviews, but never passed that first screening step and was wondering why she wasn't getting any, you know, face-to-face interviews. Well, finally got a face-to-face interview. Excited about doing it, felt that, you know, I'm going to get this job, I'm going to get it. Well, she didn't end up getting the job. And she said, you know what, I'm going to give them a call to find out what happened because I was just sure I got this job. Well, she talked to the human resource director, and they told her, you know, I'm not supposed to be sharing this information, but I'm going to give you a suggestion that while you're receiving unemployment, you have to be doing something else just besides getting unemployment. You need to be out there doing some type of work experience, taking some type of leadership classes. You have to be making yourself more marketable, especially in this type of economy where you're competing with other people who might not be laid off or if they are laid off. So that's, I want to just tie that into what I'm going to be talking about today and emphasizing how important volunteering is. And I'm going to be speaking on it from a different perspective of volunteering and calling it a work experience opportunity. If you can proceed to the next slide. In Illinois, in the fiscal year 2012, unfortunately, our contracted employment and training providers were reduced by 50%. And this was the main way that we utilized engagement activities for our TANF participants. So, of course, our TANF offices and staff, we were very concerned about, well, what are we going to do? Where are we going to send our customers? And, of course, the agencies, we still have the mission of self-sufficiency, independence for TANF customers, and we want to work with our TANF population. Of course, we had increased TANF caseload, so we said, well, what are we going to do? Also, we had other performance outcomes we had to meet as well, continue to meet our work participation rates, which we wanted to avoid financial penalties, as many other states wanted to. As you can proceed to the next slide. So one of the things that we wanted to do into developing some strategies, well, and I'm going to just speak about one of them, is we entered into work experience partnerships. And what is work experience? It's basically an activity in which TANF participants are placed in a supervised assignment with public, private, or not-for-profit employer organizations and government agencies that have a written agreement with the department. So TANF participants do this in exchange for their TANF SNAP benefits. And this will provide the participant with experience in a work setting to develop those work skills while, you know, receiving TANF assistance. And in the next slide, I'm going to talk about who are the partners that we partnered and collaborated with. A variety of people. Hospitals, hospice agencies, and nursing homes. Within this healthcare sector, this was a good area to partner with. It seemed during the economy, they didn't get hit as hard as some other places. They were still doing a lot of hiring. And through working with some hospitals and hospice agencies, we found out that they have to have a certain percentage of volunteers, especially with the hospice agency. I believe it's about 5% volunteers. And this was based on them continually getting their Medicaid funding that they informed us. So this was a real win-win for us. And through this, developing a relationship with this particular hospice agency, we were able to build on that with two TANF offices. They opened up a third hospice agency on the north side, so we just kind of partnered with them as well. We were able to actually get hired from this. So they did all the, you know, background checks and so forth. So the healthcare sector is just a good place to tap into as far as employment opportunities. We also have been working with factories, restaurants, daycare centers, Head Start programs, or where the daycare center is also a Head Start also. This is the area where we learned from working with the Head Start programs that working and partnering with the TANF participants doing work experience in those settings, this also assists and helps them to meet in-kind match up to 25% as far as the supervision that they provided for the TANF participant. So that's something that we learned from them. And so when meeting with them, we just kind of put that out there as an incentive for them to want to partner with us. And also partnering with non-for-profit agencies, foster care agencies, et cetera. Now, going to the next slide, entering into a partnership with a partner, these are just some of their responsibilities. We basically enter into a written work experience agreement. There's no money attached. They have to complete a worksite position description. So whatever those work experience positions that they have, for example, if they have two janitorial positions or two clerical positions, they would actually identify that and the details of that information. We would review the expectation for both the partner and the IDHS TANF offices. We definitely will want the TANF participant to be assigned to a meaningful, specified work activity where they're going to actually gain real job skills. And it's best to treat them as an employee. That's going to assist helping building those soft skills and teaching them how they work in a real environment and just making them feel important. Most definitely providing daily supervision and emphasizing that the weekly timesheets for any TANF participants that are doing work experience at any of their any of the agencies, that they have to provide that on a weekly basis. Going into the next slide, as we're meeting with the partner just to see if they would like to partner with us, we emphasize that these are some of the benefits for you. There are no out-of-pocket expenses for you. Now, the TANF participant will be there for, they're not going to be there forever. They'll be there anywhere between 6 to 9 months or less time, depending on if the TANF office might have another opportunity they might want to place that TANF participant. But that's just to let them know we're not going to have people doing work experience here forever. It's going to be time limited. Our focus is we want the customer to actually gain work experience and skills. And we also let the partner know that hiring is not mandatory, but we definitely remind them that employment is our outcome and that we hope during this partnership they will find a TANF participant that they will hire. And that if they're not hiring during that time period, we're going to take those skills and knowledge and experience that they learned from one entity, take that, start incorporating job search into that work experience assignment so they can take whatever the skills that they learned there and go somewhere else to the same entity and get hired somewhere. So it still can be a win-win for us. We also indicate if there are some other things such as it meets their volunteer Medicaid match. We remind them of that if they're a hospice agency or if they're a Head Start program. We remind them of the in-kind match that it can help meet for them in those regards. We also indicate that it can be used as a screening tool for potential employees. Maybe they're working with a temp agency, and this will be a win-win for them as well. Lastly, we indicate that if they hire the TANF participant, that they are eligible for the Work Opportunity Tax Credit and just provide them and remind them of that information as well. Can you proceed to the next slide? Now, for the TANF offices, what are our responsibilities? Well, in this partnership, we want to make sure we just screen suitable TANF participants and we complete whatever the agreed-upon referral process is with that particular partner. As the TANF caseworker is referring TANF participants to this partner, we want to make sure we emphasize to the TANF participant that this is a great opportunity. We don't promise employment, but we make sure we inform them that this can lead to employment and that you always want to do your best job. You never know who's looking at you on that work experience assignment, so you want to always do your best. That TANF office makes sure that they determine the appropriate number of hours that the TANF participant is going to do work experience there. We want to make sure that we're monitoring, making visits to the location so we can resolve any problems and issues, so we can keep the lines of communication open between the partner and the office. And as long as that TANF participant is going, and we're getting weekly timesheets to know that that TANF participant is going as they're supposed to, we're going to provide supportive services for that participant. Can you proceed to the next slide? Now, these are some of the benefits for us. This is going to be engagement in a suitable activity for the TANF participant. So we're still on our well on way of our plan of independence and self-sufficiency. We're going to meet expected performance outcomes, and this is also going to assist us in meeting work participation rates because work experience is accountable activity. Proceeding to the next slide. Now, the participant also has responsibility, and again, we want to remind them that they have to report to their work experience assignment timely. They have to follow work rules, and we want them to gain work experience to enhance their skills and make them more marketable in the job market. And in my next slide, this is just going to talk about the benefits to the TANF participant, which is most important of all. This working on this work experience assignment is going to build self-esteem. It's going to build soft skills. It allows time and work experience that they're doing in these various positions to transfer onto a resume. It also allows employment opportunities through these partnerships that we have developed that we've actually gotten TANF participants actually hired. So when you have other TANF participants that are doing work experience and they see people who've actually gotten hired, that motivates them to even do their best and to say, you know, I'm doing this work experience. I'm just not doing it just to be doing it, but there is actually some employment opportunities there. I'm actually gaining some knowledge and skills that I can take and transfer somewhere. Also, the partnering agency can also be used as a work reference. So that's a great thing. Lastly, it can direct a career pathway to self-sufficiency. Possibly through this work experience that this person might realize that, you know, doing work experience at this hospital, I really found out I really do like assisting with patients, or they may want to go into nursing, et cetera, or working in the daycare or the Head Start. Maybe from working from there, they go and they take some child care development classes that's going to help them on their way. Lastly, within Illinois Department of Human Services, we do have a particular department that's not under my leadership, but I'm going to provide you some overview of the program. And if somebody wants some additional information afterwards, I definitely can probably connect them to the particular people who handle that, who handle this particular department. Under the Bureau of Training and Support Services, within the Office of Human Resources, they manage the department's volunteer service program. And so basically, in providing you an overview, as a result of July 1st, in the next slide, 1997, several human service agencies merged into the agency, what we call today, Illinois Department of Human Services. And as a result of this collaboration, there was a statewide volunteer services program that was created by IDHS just to improve the delivery of human services. So through this, the value of volunteers is immeasurable and enhances the lives of individuals we serve. All potential volunteers are required to complete an application, pass the Department of Children and Family Services background check, and to ensure confidentiality is not compromised. So services volunteers provide are viewed as being supplemental and not a replacement for staff. Volunteers assist by providing services such as companionship, mentoring, entertainment, special events, sorting, distributing clothes, tutoring, greeters, donations, et cetera. So there's a volunteer services program manager that oversees the statewide volunteer services program within Illinois, and each IDHS facility or office who actually have volunteers have to have an assignment description or reflect the coordination of volunteer services. And this person, again, has to go through appropriate qualifications, experience, and authority to actually implement the volunteer program. So, again, if you have any further questions about the volunteer, the statewide volunteer program, I'll be more than happy to be able to connect someone to that information. But I hope that there was something that I said today that you found insightful. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kapriska. James Butler serves as the federal project officer and will offer a few remarks before we give an overview of the question asking opportunity. James?
Yes, thank you so much, Josh, and thank you so much to all of our speakers. In addition to the presentations that we've just heard, I just wanted to share one additional thought as we move towards the question and answer session, and you guys are in the process of typing in your questions. In the work that we do here in OFA to support TANF programs, it's worth remembering that our states are home to many faith-based and community organizations, many of which serve TANF-eligible families and individuals. You can learn more about this project by checking out our PRTA website under the tab TANF Initiatives. You'll find that these faith-based and community groups are able to offer important benefits for low-income families. A few of them are things such as access to large numbers of volunteers, including highly skilled professionals who serve as mentors, benefits from interfaith activity, particularly interagency collaboration, unique capacity to help forge change in the lives of high-risk individuals. So as we think further about volunteering and how to successfully manage volunteer partnerships, I would encourage all of you and those of you who are representing TANF programs or other public agencies to consider partnerships with the faith-based community organizations as one component in working with your volunteers. That's all that I have for right now, and we can go ahead and move on to the question and answer session. Thank you so much.
Hello, this is Sarah here, and I'm just going to briefly describe how to type a question so that we can spend time answering the questions that you may have. You will see on the top bar on your screen, next to voice and video, a Q&A bar that you can select. And in the when you select that bar, you will see type your question here. And that's exactly where you will type your question, and that will allow us to receive your question and then answer it. Once you are done typing it, it's important that you click Ask, just so that you confirm your submission of that question. Thank you. Our first question is, do you include persons with disabilities as volunteers?
Well, this is Georgia. Sorry.
Please.
I would be happy to answer that. I gave one example, but I think that question was from you, Don. I really appreciate that because people with disabilities are incredibly helpful and can contribute so much, and I think sometimes they're our best volunteers because they find a lot of doors closing to them. And so when we say, oh, man, we could totally use your help, I think that that in itself is welcoming. And one thing that I find with people with disabilities is that sometimes they have a more flexible schedule or more time. We need volunteers during the daytime hours. And we find that people with disabilities sometimes are more able to meet that need than people who maybe work a full-time job and don't have the ability to serve during the day.
Someone else asked, what about clients with CORI issues? And CORI is C-O-R-I.
I'm not sure we know what that means.
Yeah, I can't speak to CORI, but I would like to – I missed the opportunity, sorry, to add to what Georgia was saying about individuals with disabilities. One of the requirements for all of the AmeriCorps programs as well as Senior Corps programs with the corporation is that they provide opportunities that would meet this audience's needs.
So I guess I'll just add one more kind of practical thing about that, is that while there are a lot of benefits, you do have to – the reason I included that slide of not only can but also can't is it's really important to recognize what the can'ts are. So for one of our volunteers who is autistic, she can't participate in large group functions. She needed an office. She needed a private place where she could have the lights to be darker because her eyes are very sensitive and noise really affects her. So we were able to accommodate those things. And, you know, I think, does a volunteer normally get an office where they can turn off the lights? And, you know, do we normally accommodate like that? Well, if the volunteer is going to provide years of full-time service to your organization, then the answer is yes, it's well worth accommodating. So I would just really encourage people that, you know, like I said in my slide, sometimes there are barriers, but really work through those barriers and you might get the best volunteer you've ever had.
I would also add, this is Michael again, sorry to dominate, but each state has funds set aside for outreach to individuals with disabilities. So when you go on our website, and that's also where you would find other information about our programs, but you can also find on our website contact information for each. I am the state office director for Kansas and Missouri, but we have a state office in almost every state, and they can direct you to the different programs and more information about programs for individuals with disabilities.
And hi, this is Caprisa. I'm not familiar with the CORI, CORI question.
We actually asked the person that posted that question to define CORI, and if we hear back from them what they mean by CORI, we will definitely read that question again. But for now, we actually have some new questions.
So this next one may be a faith-based question, it sounds like. For working with the faith community, how do you approach people to be volunteers in a manner that helps people work with poverty and asks them to remain secular in that work? How do you navigate the church-state dynamic when recruiting volunteers from the faith community?
Well, this is Michael. I have a really good example of an AmeriCorps VISTA program in St. Louis. It is a faith-based sponsor. It's South Grand Senior Ministries in St. Louis. They came to us. It was also the program I used as the example that had a high quality of recruitment. They were in a church basement, but they served from the church a area that surrounded the church that was highly populated with low-income seniors. These seniors were not able to repair their homes, needed transportation to get to and from basic appointments, the grocery store, the doctor's office, et cetera. So they came to us with a plan that they had developed to address the needs of this community long term. One of the positions was a transportation coordinator, full-time for individuals, but each of these individuals attended church services to recruit volunteers from the pulpit. Now, they couldn't proselytize, you know, teach Bible classes, lead prayer. They couldn't do those things. So it was one of the most innovative ways I've seen a program utilize federal resources while, you know, serving the faith community. So from within their program, these members knew, you know, you're going to be going to church on Sunday to recruit volunteers. Now, they can't require them to go to church, but if they drop by the church and, you know, jump up in front of the mic and, you know, describe what their volunteer opportunities are, that met this organization's needs. However, most often the individuals that were interested in serving with this faith-based organization also shared, you know, the similar faith. So it was easy for most of their members to participate in those types of activities. But again, they can't lead those activities that are addressing religious issues. But the recipients of service throughout the community, and they couldn't exclude other low-income individuals within that within a certain range of the church. If they needed the services, they were happy to provide them. So I hope that is helpful.
I really want to jump into, this is Georgia, our house, we plug in about 55 different faith community members. So we say congregations because they're not all churches. They're not all Christian. So we call them congregations. So we plug in 55 or so different congregations into service every year within our house. And most of those groups serve by serving meals at our house. So we provide 77,000 meals a year, and almost all of those are bought, prepared, and served by congregations. And so for us, the way that we handle that is just, again, kind of going back to that rubric, really understanding from them, what do you want to get out of this? And I'll say that there are some faith community members who have no intention, no desire of speaking about their religion to our clients, and there are others that have said explicitly, we want to come there and evangelize about the Lord Jesus Christ, and are that explicit in their call. And so we first kind of find out from them, where are you, what is your intention? And then we try to ask the question to them, you know, if we set up these parameters, will that meet your need? And I would say that, you know, with just to use this as an example, with an evangelical Christian church who had a part of their mission was to do outreach in the name of Jesus to the people who were here, we were able to give them an opportunity while they served the lunch meal to basically put up a sign that said, your meal is served by, and then it listed their church. And they left a box of Bibles. They did not hand them out. They didn't pray before the meal, so it was there as a resource for people if they wanted it. If our clients wanted to reach out to them and ask them about their church, that was up to the clients, and we were explicit with the volunteers about how that would work. The other thing that we do is, like I said, we have groups from all different kinds of religions, so Catholics and Protestants. We also have the Temple and the Jewish Federation who have a tradition of serving every Christmas. And we were really intentional. There's only two Islamic centers, two mosques here in Little Rock, and we were very intentional about reaching out to the Islamic community, to the Muslim community, and we've recently been able to plug in the local Islamic center into serving as well. We even got a call from an organized group of atheists here who also felt welcome to serve in our organization. So I think that that's a good example of how our uniform policies around that make all people, no matter what their faith is, feel welcome to serve and welcome to be served.
Great, thank you. Our next question is, how is workers' compensation insurance handled for volunteers?
Well, this is Caprice. As far as with us, we have workers' comp that's actually covered. So we just let them know that as long as the whatever the schedule is for that TANF participant, if something actually does happen, it has to be on that actual schedule. So if their schedule is from Monday to Thursday and they're doing 4 hours per day, and that's between nine to one. And something happens at 3 o'clock, and that's not their scheduled time, then workman's comp is not covered. But we do have a workman's comp procedure policy that where they would send or fax whatever information that is concerning any participant as far as that. But it has to occur during the assigned hours and time that participant is actually there.
And for us, I've asked my insurance agent about this, and our volunteers are not covered by our workers' comp, but they are covered by our liability, our general liability insurance.
And if they're AmeriCorps Vista members, they are covered by something similar through a federal program that we administer. So if there was an incident where your AmeriCorps Vista member were serving, you would follow the proper procedures that you would learn about at supervisor's training to get in touch with our office. And then we have a point of contact in our D.C. headquarters that handles all of those situations.
Okay, great. Thank you. This next question is regarding TANF Work Experience Program, the TANF Work Experience Program. This attendee is wondering, do you inform your potential work sites that the participants are recipients of TANF, or do you term the program as something else? This specific attendee states that they have different views in their office, and some use it as a selling point for the program with WOTC, and other staff do not feel that they should share this information with the site.
Well, we do share that they're TANF recipients, but in that sense, they're pre-meeting and talking with them. But at the same time, we're educating them that, educating them about people on public assistance and not to have any myths, stigmas about people who are in assistance, and that our TANF caseload has grown by 50%, and we're seeing a different characteristics of TANF. People have been on unemployment for a year, 2 years, and have exhausted that, and now we're seeing a different face of people who've never been on assistance before, educated customers. So we try to educate them in saying that don't stereotype somebody who's receiving TANF assistance. They're somebody who could be very, very educated. And plus, we want to educate them and let them know that because if there is an employment opportunity there, we definitely want that agency to take advantage of that work opportunity, the WOTC credit. So, yes, we do let them know that it has not been a problem, but we do educate them. And from time to time, you will come across somebody who might be hesitant, and that's what we might say, let's start small. Let's start off something very small that's manageable to see how you, see how you like that and just educate them on the positives and everything. But, yes, so we do inform them.
Thank you very much. This next question is the screening process for volunteers similar to that of mentors? How different are these volunteer services to that of traditional mentoring programs?
For Vista members, they're fingerprinted at the training. For my region, the training is held in Albuquerque or Denver, and we have staff dedicated to the process of fingerprinting while they're there on site. So they go through an extensive background check. Additionally, when you select a member and you submit their application to my office, someone on this team does an SOPR check, which is free. It's the National Sex Offender Registry, and it connects to all 50 states' databases. So that's the first step, is the NSOPR. Then the second step is the fingerprinting, which does the extensive background. If an assignment comes in that has a volunteer placed with a vulnerable population or close to that population prior to the fingerprint background check coming back, the results then we ask that the VISTA member service be limited until we get those results. But typically, we get those rather quickly, within 2 or 3 weeks of the training, so it's not an issue.
And for our organization, one of the ways we're able to plug in so many volunteers and so many different volunteers is that we have different levels of screening. So for every person who sets foot on our campus, because we have so many vulnerable children here, every single person, we do run that sex offender check on them because, like Michael mentioned, it's free. I'll also kind of mention with that that's one of the reasons why it is necessary. You can't have an organization, I guess you could, but with the kind of people that we serve, it's important to have some staff involvement. So that screening and making sure that the checks and balances are put in place, that happens by staff. But like I mentioned, I mean, we have some folks who are on probation who, you know, may have a drug offense. Obviously, we're not going to put them in the room with our children, but they can work outside and clear the weeds off our fence line to serve alongside our children or in our licensed child care center. That's a much higher background check, screening, FBI, criminal background, adult and child maltreatment, and sex offender. So just different levels for different needs. When we have 4,000 different people serving meals in our kitchen, there's really no screening on that other than, you know, we make sure that they're trained enough to know the safety procedures and serving meals and wearing gloves and whatnot.
Thank you very much.
Volunteer opportunities under the Volunteer Services Program, potential volunteers are required to complete an application and go through a Department of Children and Family Services background check.
Okay. Thank you. This next question is, what are some of the steps taken by the Illinois Department of Human Services or other service providers to ensure that TANF work experience participants do not exceed the amount of cash assistance they receive per month in accordance with the Fair Labor Standards Act? Please let me know if I should read that again, because that was a rather long question.
Well, I think I know maybe what they're referring to, I'm assuming, maybe making sure that they're assigned to the correct number of hours and that you're not violating the Fair Labor Standards Act. For number one, we use these kind of work experience because our TANF caseload is so large, and we also have employment and training providers as well. We use multiple strategies. So partnerships with work experience partners, we refer TANF customers who usually only have to do one activity, a core activity. And so we use that as a strategy so we don't have to, they're not having required to do a primary core and a secondary core. So that's one strategy that we use. And any customers that they're referring, they're going to actually assign the customer, the TANF participant, the number of hours. So that's not something we expect the work experience partner to do. The office has more knowledge and experience of that. So when they refer the customer, they would actually put on the referral, they let them know the number of hours that this person can only do per week so that we make sure that they don't exceed those number of hours. I hope that answers that question.
Thank you very much. The next question is, in regards to VISTA, could a state agency that administers TANF use VISTA volunteers to oversee and promote their volunteer programs?
You can, provided it's not displacing employment. So if you have a program that you don't have staff for, say, an unfunded mandate or an idea for a program that you want to implement statewide, a VISTA project would be ideal, especially when you're talking recipients of service are of the low-income community. You're providing them with resources that could help get them out of poverty.
Thank you. This next question is, in Illinois, if a TA participant does not meet their hours of participation, are they sanctioned? If so, do you have full family sanctions? And I think by TA, they intended TANF participant.
Okay. If a TANF participant does not do all of their hours, well, one of the things that we, as we meet with our partners, we let them know that we know on any real job that people have to be off. So we want them to make up their hours. So if they have to be off and it's approved by the employer and they're rescheduled for 4 hours, we want them to make up their hours within that time frame. So that's the number one thing that we encourage. That's the first strategy. But, yes, if someone stops attending for whatever reason, then the employer needs to inform the TANF office so that they can do a reconciliation to try to get that TANF participant back in the office to determine if they have good cause. And if a sanction is appropriate, then the TANF worker would sanction them, and we do have a full level sanction.
Thank you very much. This next question is also for Illinois, and it is there a concern with displacement of paid employees at factories or restaurants with volunteer placements? And kind of as a follow-up, are there any strategies that you use to navigate this relationship with the employer?
Well, the first part of the question is for for-profit businesses, we find out the total number of employees that they have there. And first of all, it is determined on the basis of number of employees that they have there. So for every 3 employees, we can only send 1 TANF participant. So we want to make sure that we're not sending you more than the number of staff that you employ there. So, and the other thing is we shy away from people who have unions and so forth, so that we don't get in any type of issues with that. So we shy away from any places that might have unions or so forth. But then places or businesses that have employees, that's the first thing, is that we want to find out what's the total number of employees that you have there, because we don't want to be supplying you with more people than what you should have. And I think that was the first part of the question. And what was the second part of the question?
The second part of the question was just if you had any strategies to navigate the relationship with the employer.
Oh, I think number one is first sit down with them and the partnering TANF office that you would like to partner with. And first of all, have the positives, have all the benefits that are going to be for that employer. What are the benefits that they're gaining from them? And making sure that you're getting also the win-wins that you want. You want it to be an engagement activity for yourself. You're trying to get self-sufficiency for the customer, employment. So you have to have the positives presented to them, so it's a win-win for them, so they see it's an advantage for them. At the same time, kind of just have everything outlined of what the expectations are. There's certain things that you're gonna need from them. They're getting somebody, they don't have to pay any cost, any wages, so that's a benefit for them. They're using this as a potential screening tool. That's a benefit for them. But at the same time, letting them know this is someone that's not going to be with you forever, and that we hope that you can hire them, and if you cannot hire them, that we do want to, this panel participant, we want to use the skills and knowledge and work experience that they obtained with you and transfer somewhere else. But for the most part, we've been finding that they're actually hiring our customers. We had a factory, and this was the first time we partnered with the factory, and it's a pretty large factory. And I think within the first 2 or 3 weeks, they hired 5 people. And so I think it's just basically making sure the lines of communication is open and be clear on what the expectation is from both sides, and seeing so that they can actually see what the win-win all the way around is.
Can I actually add something to that? As a kind of on the employer side, we don't have the same program here in Arkansas with TANF for participants, but we do have a similar population who are served through an AARP job training program, where elderly people or people over 55 are able to be placed. Typically, they're unskilled workers who are able to be placed at nonprofits or at jobs. So it's kind of the same type of population, but specifically older people. And one of the things that, and we've been a site for that, one of the things that I find as really important for me in wanting to plug those folks in into our organization is knowing that we have some say on the screening side. So being able to be reassured, you know, I'm sure that applies with the TANF participants too, but as an employer, being able to have some say, you know, if we don't want to accept someone, and also some recourse. So, I mean, I know with that program there were times when I had to basically fire a volunteer, and knowing that wouldn't forever jeopardize our relationship with the AARP program, or in your case, you know, with TANF, I'm sure that having that open line of communication, as you said, and also the recourse or the ability to have a say over who's serving within your organization, I think that's really important as well.
That's a good point, and that is one of the things that we also talk about, to let them know is they're not required to keep somebody. They actually have, depending on that partner, they might, most of them want to go through an interview process. And that's good for the TANF participant as well, because that just gets them prepared. So if there's somebody that does not pass that interview kind of process with that partner, then they also going to let their TANF office know why. So that could be something that they can work on with them, or actually maybe send them to one of our, you know, providers. But, yes, I'm glad you brought that up.
Thank you very much for those insightful questions and answers. Now I'm going to turn it over to Josh, who's going to begin the conclusion of this webinar.
And with that, we just simply want to thank all of you for your active participation in today's webinar. A particular thank you to our speakers, leadership at the Office of Family Assistance, Lisa Washington Thomas and James Butler, and Georgia Mjartin from our house, Michael Laverty from the Corporation for National Community Service, and Kapriska Randolph Robinson from Illinois DHS. By way of reminder, you will be receiving a PDF version of all of today's slides, and within 5 to 7 business days, you will be able to log on to the Peer TA website and see the slides and transcript from today's conversation, as well as a PDF of all the materials that we have been discussing today. That website, one more time, is www.peerta.acf.hhs.gov. So that's www.peerta.acf.hhs.gov. Thank you again to all for your participation, and we look forward to following up as opportunities allow in the weeks ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This does conclude today's conference.